Hello and welcome to TXF Export Finance Podcast. I'm Catherine Morton, Head of Trade, Treasury and Risk at TXF, and I'm joined here today by Hesham Zakai, Managing Director at TXF. We're going to run through the TXF Data's full year Export Finance Report 2018. So, overall volumes, let's talk a little bit about the headlines, Hesham. How many ECA-supported deals were there and how does that compare with last year?
Well, I have to say it's very positive headlines because it's been quite a buoyant year for the ECA finance market in 2018. Certainly some growth as compared with the previous year. In terms of some of those headline figures, for example, the total amount of financing amounted to $137.8 billion, which represents a 63% increase on 2017. And similarly, the number of deals at 404 represents an increase from 278 the previous year. So we're seeing some really positive growth in the ECA finance market. I think these figures reflect a heightened risk awareness in the commercial bank market, not only because of Basel regulations, which have been a driving factor over the last couple of years, but more prominently Trumpian trade policy, which is starting to have an impact on actual and perceived global political risk.
In terms of the top sector, oil and gas.
Oil and gas is the top sector. I suppose one of the footnote, amusing footnote perhaps to add actually about the overall volumes in 2018 is that we did see a spike in Q4. Now you might want to speculate that that's the motivating impact of banker bonuses being handed out at the end of the year. Indeed though, oil and gas was the most active. And this is again, quite an interesting sector to be looking at because oil and gas has had a little bit of up and down activity over the last couple of years. But in 2018, the number of deals jumped to 32. That's twice as much as they were in 2016. And the volume has also risen by about 45% to $32.6 billion. So indeed, oil and gas is the largest ECA-backed sector.
So shall we come back to the oil and gas in a little bit, but let's split it down into regions and then we can go into the countries and then the sectors. So in terms of regions, Europe ascendant, so tell me how that's panned out.
Yeah, so Europe has had a very, very strong year with a 31.3% share of ECA-backed volume. It overtook the Middle East, which was previously the most active region. But it's definitely worth pointing out that the Middle East has still posted strong activity. And indeed, between Europe and the Middle East, they jointly account for half or just over half of ECA-backed financing. I think in large part, this is fueled by major offshore wind financings that we see, for example, in the EU, by the financial close on the mega TAP project, and finally on a number of major refinery projects in the GCC, which also kind of speaks to the previous point about why oil and gas has had a buoyant year.
And who topped the lending countries in terms of volume?
So for the second year running, the top lending country was France. And I guess one of the biggest risers and quickest risers was the United Kingdom. So we do see a lot of activity from the French banks and we see indeed a very active and ambitious BPI France, especially since it's now kind of firmly got its feet under the table in terms of the transfer of guarantees, which it took over a few years ago now from COFAS. But yeah, rounding off the top five, so we have France as the top lending country, the United Kingdom in second place, Germany in third, Japan in fourth, and Spain in fifth.
But we're ignoring the kind of the pander in the room, really. I guess we're not really seeing as much visibility of Sinosure and BRI program deals for the Belt and Road Initiative. But it is interesting to see UK in number two slot. That's surprising.
It is, and maybe this is this is reflective of a government that's very keen to continue to promote its international expertise and experience and veneer, particularly at, let's say, a very kind of difficult time politically for the country. I would add about China. I think it's no surprise that the question of transparency in China arises, not necessarily emanating from the state itself, but from access to the figures in terms of the amount of deals that it is being done. What we can see is that there is an increased amount of activity on the part of international banks with Sinosure and with China Exim.
And in terms of the top borrowing countries, we've got the UAE at the very top of the pile.
Yep, we do indeed. So the Middle East generally, again, kind of features quite heavily. The UAE is at the top of the pile, followed by the United Kingdom, Turkey, Vietnam, and then the US. And I think it is interesting that it's followed so closely by the UK, where project sponsors are really starting to feel the pain of a sterling debt premium linked to Brexit. And now I think they're going to be even more cost of debt focused than they might have been prior to the referendum.
In terms of the currencies of the borrowing, we've seen the euro going up in terms of market share and the dollar going down. I guess that's no surprise.
No, it hasn't. And just to kind of give a little bit more detail on the specifics behind that. So the euro has gone up in terms of market share to 35%. In 2018. This is an increase of 11% from 2017, when it was 24%. At the same time, the dollar is down now to 56%. But given the skew to European bank lending and away from the Middle East that we've had, that helps to explain why the euro has gone up so significantly.
And I guess when we come to the lending banks, that currency reflection will be in terms of if the French are the ones who are doing most of the lending, and a lot of the lending's been done in euros. Mm-hmm. So how has the nationality of the funds shifted then?
Indeed, so France, unsurprisingly, given it tops the top lending countries, is now also, you'll see a number of French banks on the top five lenders. So number one is Société Générale with a 10.8% overall volume. Number two, Crédit Agricole at 9.5%. We then have UniCredit in third place, 7.1%. BNP Paribas, the third of the French banks in the top five, 6.9%. And finally, Santander at 5%.
So if we turn to the banks that have been lending in dollars, bearing in mind the Middle East fall off, how does the top five look?
Yeah, so the top five, unsurprisingly, looks different when you're looking at dollar lending. Number one is HSBC with almost 10%. Number two, SMBC at 6.3%. Third place is Santander at 5.6%. Number four, BNP Paribas, 5.2%. And number five, Crédit Agricole at 5.2%. Santander, BNP Paribas and Crédit Agricole are top lenders in both dollar and euro denominated transactions, which kind of reflects some of their footprint and some of the activity that we've seen them participate in. I think it's of course that you see Société Générale not as prominent on the list when we're looking solely in terms of dollar denominated liquidity. But indeed, to really get to the bottom of the dollar picture, it's having to take a look at what's happened in the Middle East and the projects funded therein.
Indeed. Looking at the deals by use of proceeds then, how have SMEs fared? Is it just lip service? I know all the ECAs are talking about lending to SMEs.
So there's more than one way, unsurprisingly, to look at the SME picture. As you say, Catherine, there's been a number of export credit agencies that have had a renewed and reinforced and I think very sincere focus on SME financing. The first percentage that or metric that one might want to look at is that only 4.4% of ECA-supported loans went to deals in the $1 to $100 million volume range last year. That might seem like it's quite disappointing, and I suppose as a percentage of overall volume it can be, but this needs to be looked at in the context of that overall volume growing substantially. As we said at the beginning, it's been a very buoyant year for the industry. So that 4.4% actually equates to 207 deals, which is up 33% on the previous year, and a total volume of around $6.5 billion. I think that's actually very, very healthy when you compare that $6.5 billion to what it was in previous years. The second thing that needs to be appreciated when it comes to SMEs and export credit agency financing is there are a number of indirect or ancillary benefits to SMEs who are involved in the supply chains of some of the larger corporates whose financing is benefited from ECA. So it's a little bit of a mixed picture, with the overall percentage or proportion not as high as it was last year, just a tiny bit lower. But when you drill behind and into the detail of that headline figure, the picture starts to look a lot more promising. And hopefully with the advent of more new technologies, with further standardization, we'll see even more progress made on financing this segment.
So it'll be interesting to turn to the sectors at this stage then to maybe have a little look at the different ways in which the ECA borrowing is actually going out in each country and sector. So perhaps if we turn first of all to aviation.
Yes. So
and maybe it's been another bad year, I guess, for ECA-backed aviation. How do you see that?
So the aviation picture is indeed very interesting because you've had both of the kind of major global manufacturers, Boeing and Airbus, tackling various difficulties. Boeing, of course, hamstrung by the issues faced by US Exim. Of course, we know that US Exim still doesn't have quorum on its board, meaning it cannot finance or support any transactions above $10 million. That effectively puts Boeing out of the picture. And Airbus as well has had a number of issues in terms of being able to finance. Where Airbus has had an advantage in this field, however, is that it's regained access on a case-by-case basis. Interestingly, its lacuna from the ECA finance market compelled it to look at alternatives to ECA aircraft sales during that period, something known as Project Baltazar. So this was a new scheme structured via Marsh Europe, which has seen Airbus act as underwriter with a host of banks, including BNP Paribas, ING and DBJ, amongst others, providing 100% of cover of up to 85% of FMV for tenors of up to 12 years. So the aviation market has actually continued to progress despite the challenges suffered with the ECA backing for aviation. That's meant that although we've had a few more deals, so between 2017 and 2018, the number of deals went up from 3 to 18, and the number of financing went from $1 billion to $2.257 billion. Despite that kind of growth, you have to understand that $1 billion was an all-time low, and that $2.257 billion that it's grown to still really pales in comparison to the amount of aviation activity we saw in the ECA finance space. So it's an interesting time, actually, Catherine, for the aviation market, because orders continue to go up, deliveries continue to go up, but ECA funding doesn't necessarily go up in line with that.
Interesting. I think we led off on oil and gas, looking a bit more positive now as well. So, I mean, it did have a certain amount of recovery. What are your views on the oil and gas sector?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive story. I think it's probably particularly linked to many of the major deals that we saw this year, many of which are either refinery or LNG linked. So I mentioned before Duqm and Babco. Alongside that, we also have Corpus Christi 3 and Midor. The interesting thing about it is that it's symptomatic of growing LNG demand in the gas to power market. And for Middle Eastern producers and their kind of backers within the market, it shows their evolution in attempting to generate product higher up the value chain.
So I guess moving on to power, the renewables have been the star story this year, last year, but ECA backed conventional power, slightly more gloomy picture. How does that flesh out a bit?
No, absolutely. So starting with the positive picture of renewables, they have absolutely jumped 150%. From 2017 to 2018, so they now stand at $17 billion. A very, very positive story. And of course, this has to be taken in the context of a civil society that's clamoring for more renewables, that's clamoring for more sustainability. And the ECA finance space is showing that it's not tone deaf to the politics and the demand in which it operates. On the power side, almost commensurately, there has been a drop. So conventional power volume is down again. That's the third year in a row in which it's seen declines. It now hovers just above the $5 billion mark. If you were to take a look at that in a little bit of detail, you can see that it's probably down to Indonesia's largely JPACT power program nearing its end, which has a bit of an impact. And of course, unsurprisingly, the number of coal-fired projects that have been supported has really decreased as well.
So if we move on to the shipping sector, I mean, it's been another good year for cruise ships relatively in terms of ECA back volumes, but not so much for the non-cruise sector. Is that out of the doldrums now?
I mean, I think there's been more surprises in the shipping sector than perhaps in any other sector, really, more than we expected. So the shipping sector, the cruise ship sector specifically, it's down by $2 billion on last year, but last year was a very, very good year for the cruise shipping sector. So it's actually sitting at a very tidy $12 billion in ECA-backed volume. Very, very positive. A couple of the bigger transactions that we've seen include BPI France and Sarche cover deals totaling $4.7 billion for MSC cruises. I suppose where the surprise within the sector comes is in the non-cruise element, as you touched on in your question. That's dropped to $3 billion last year, and it's shown very little signs of recovery. Despite showing little sign of recovery, there was actually a really substantial recovery because it jumped from that $3 billion by multiple of three to $9 billion. And some of the transactions have been very, very large tickets. CMA CGM, for example, reached financial close on a $1.38 billion facility, which comprised China Exim direct loans and Sinosure covered transactions, which had international banks involved.
And finally, we turn to telecoms. So no ECA-backed satellite deals last year, but Nordic companies still getting backing for equipment deals. What's the picture for emerging market deals, for instance?
Yep, absolutely. I think we continue to see the number of orders growing, and telecoms and the kind of technological space in which it operates will continue to grow. For ECA-backed financing, the correlation between whether ECA grows in tandem with the market as a whole comes down to the question of competition. If national exporters are competing against one another for a borrower's financing, for a borrower's project, then we are likely to see the presence of ECAs more. If there isn't quite as much competition, however, then the ECA activity won't actually increase. What I would say is, in terms of telecom penetration in emerging markets, it's continuing to grow. That's expected to continue for a while. And the market as a whole is expected to double to $562 billion by 2023.
So in terms of the top ECAs by covered volume, not notwithstanding the Chinese as well, who's topping the rankings last year?
Yeah, so if you exclude the concessional loans that we're seeing from China Exim, top of the rankings is JBIC, and second is Sarche. Sarche was first in 2017, and now it's in second place. But what's very interesting about these number one and number two is that they have very different models in terms of how they have operated, certainly over the last year in 2018. So JBIC, for example, of its $13.6 billion in covered ECA volume, $12.5 billion was in the form of direct loans. Sarche, on the other hand, of its $13.5 billion, not a single buck was in direct loans. So very, very different models. That being said, the overall volume that they've covered is almost identical, and the number of deals is very, very similar as well. 31 with JBIC and 30 with Sarche. Next, we have BPI France, Euler Hermes, and UKEF. In terms of what they're respectively financing, we can see that JBIC, as aforementioned, doing a lot of power transactions and a lot in Asia Pacific. So it won't surprise you to know that their top country is Indonesia, given all of the PLT supported plants there, followed by Ireland, the UAE, Vietnam and Brazil. For Sarche, very, very strong once again in the Middle East, and very, very strong once again in terms of transport. Very briefly, BPI France, which, as I mentioned, came third place with $11.2 billion of financing. Very, very similar to Sarche. Very strong in the Middle East and very strong in transport. Some of the other countries where we've seen them be active include Switzerland, the US and Senegal.
Now, given that we have so much more still to cover within the Export Finance Report, which people can read, just in your terms of your headline take-homes from the report, what do you think has been the sort of the key areas from last year?
I think that market practitioners looking at this report will be heartened by the increase in volumes. I think they'll be really pleased to see that SME financing in absolute terms has grown and that renewables have absolutely grown. Those are two actually very positive strands that I would pull from this narrative. I think more remains to be done in terms of meeting some of the challenges of Basel regulations and making the export finance product one that's a little bit less cumbersome in order to handle. But 2018 really does show that the troubles of 2016 and 17, insofar as being able to get certain bankable transactions over the line, may well be behind us. We may well have crossed the Rubicon in that sense. As you mentioned, Catherine, this export finance report genuinely is a treasure trove of data. Those who want a lot more detail, who want to know the specifics of where every last dollar or euro was spent, are able to do that either through this report or through the rest of the information on TXF data.
Hesham, thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine.